Here's the 30-second lesson on what legends know. Never practice nunchucks in a crowded room. Never eat chole before a road trip. Always take your shirt off before you iron it. Don't take a call near a swimming pool. And don't forget, saving is not investing. Legends don't just save, they invest in mutual funds. Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
We are talking about Karnataka today, and with me, the master, D.K. Singh, our political editor, who you see on his own shows, Politically Correct and more. And now lately, he's also been doing headlines ke piche in Hindi. So D.K. Singh, because there are so many areas where I don't know enough, so I lean on D.K. Singh all the time. I thought the better thing is to also drag him in to join with me in this discussion or this analysis of what's happening in Karnataka. Now, Karnataka goes to the polls in part. So one part of Karnataka goes to the polls towards the end of this week. That's on Friday, on the 26th. That's a very important part of Karnataka. It also includes the city of Bengaluru. There are four seats in the city of Bengaluru. What we are doing is, we are looking at the state. Karnataka, the state, and why it's important. So first of all, remember, Karnataka is very important because BJP has been talking about 370 seats for itself. Even to get to 300, which the BJP did last time, to get to 303, in fact, in 2019, even to get there, the BJP has to sweep Karnataka. Now, Hindi heartland, UP, Bihar, Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, Gujarat, that's one story. But BJP sweep in Karnataka was uncharacteristic and unexpected. It's also the only southern state where the BJP is so powerful. Also remember, it's also a state where the BJP has just suffered a famous defeat. Just last year, they did very badly. They got about half the seats of the Congress party. So they did very poorly. So they are coming from there, and yet they have to win this state, in fact, sweep this state, if they want to get to even 300. Because beyond that, they only start counting then. So the first number for the BJP is 303. That's the number they had in 2019. Now, if you look at Karnataka, it has 28 Lok Sabha seats. By that definition, it's a mid-sized state in India. It's a definition I've given you many times. A large-sized state is one that sends more than 40 MPs. That is Bihar, we'll put Tamil Nadu also there, one shot, 39. Bihar, Tamil Nadu, West Bengal, 42, Maharashtra, 48, and Uttar Pradesh, 80. Then you have mid-sized states, which usually have seats in the 20s, say between 20 to 39 and so on. And that's where Karnataka belongs, 28 seats. Last time the BJP won 25 of these 28. Now, Karnataka is a very diverse state. It is something that since I started traveling there during the elections, I also realized that it's a very diverse state, not just in terms of caste, ethnicity, religion, etc., but also geographically or in terms of regional divisions. Karnataka has many distinct divisions. On the map, you will see these divisions marked, and I will give you a little explanation before we go to D.K. Singh to talk about the intricacies of this story. So first of all, the region which will go to the polls in the first round, the old Mysuru region, which in the state has 9 districts, Mysuru, Tumkur, Chamrajnagar, Mandya, Ramnagara, by the way, is the place where you have the rocks where the film Sholay was shot. In fact, on the 40th anniversary of the release of Sholay, I had gone there to record a 2-part Walk the Talk with Ramesh Sippy, the maker of Sholay. So Ramnagara, Hassan, Chikballapur, Kodagu, Kolar. That is 61 assembly seats and 7 parliament seats. Remember, this is also the Gowda Karam Bhumi, the Gowda family Karam Bhumi. So this region has already given India a prime minister and somebody who's been chief minister twice. That is that prime minister's son, that is H.D. Kumaraswamy. So it's a very powerful political region in that sense. It's also the heartland of the Vokkaliga caste. Now, Vokkaliga caste is a farming caste, very powerful, a bit like the Jats are in states close to Delhi, Rajasthan, Haryana, Western UP. Bit like that, a farming community, it was the popular belief is that we are about 14% population, but in the leaked, still secret, but leaked caste census of Karnataka, it looked like they are just about 8% or so. Nevertheless, they voted together with Gowda, with the Gowda family. And whenever they've been able to get some of the others to vote with them, mostly backward castes and most importantly, Muslims, they've done well. So this region goes to the polls. Then there is Bengaluru city, which has 4 Lok Sabha seats and 28 Vidhan Sabha seats. These go to the polls once. Also, this is a region with also a sizable Muslim population, because this was also Tipu Sultan's land, because the capital or the area from where he governed was in and around Mysore. So there's a lot of Muslim population in this region as well. Then we come to Central Karnataka. Central Karnataka, see the map again. It has the districts of Shivamoga, Chikmagalur, Chitradurg and Davangere. It has 25 assembly seats and 3 Lok Sabha seats. Now there's a little bit of confusion here, because one Lok Sabha seat is a combination of Chikmagalur, that is the seat where Mrs. Gandhi, we only say Mrs. Gandhi for Indira Gandhi. Indira Gandhi had once gone looking for a safe seat. So Chikmagalur and Udupi, which actually falls in coastal Karnataka, those two are combined into one Lok Sabha constituency. In any case, Central Karnataka, 3 Lok Sabha seats. Coastal Karnataka, again see the map, that is districts of Dakshin Kannada, Udupi, Uttar Kannada, 19 assembly seats and 3 Lok Sabha seats. This is a region where the BJP is very powerful. This is also a region with a strong Muslim influence, because Arab traders used to come there more than 1,000 years back, and a sizable Muslim population as well. This also has some of the most important Hindu temples there. For example, the Udupi Math. Then Kittur Karnataka, or what used to be called Bombay Karnataka. In fact, popularly, people will still say Bombay Karnataka. These were districts that were taken away from the old Bombay Presidency. In 1956, when the reorganization of states was taking place in India, these districts were taken out of Bombay Presidency and added to the new state of Karnataka, because 1956 reorganization of the states in India was carried out on linguistic basis. So these districts were seen as being Kannada speaking, at least in majority. Now Maharashtrians counter that, they don't like that, and that's why this perennial dispute over Belgaum, or what is called Belgavi now, that exists, because Maharashtra wants Belgavi merged back into their state. Districts in Kittur Karnataka or Mumbai Karnataka are Belagavi, Hubli Dharwad, that's one district, Gadag, Haveri, Bagalkot, Vijaypura, what used to be Bijapur, and that is 50 assembly seats. That's a very seat-rich region, because it's a heavily populated region. 50 assembly seats and 6 Lok Sabha seats. And then Kalyana Karnataka, again, if you generally talk to people and you might say Kalyana Karnataka, I suspect a lot of the people, particularly grown-ups, will say, what you're talking about? Because this is popularly known by its original name again. So just as the earlier part was Bombay Karnataka, this is Hyderabad Karnataka. Because these districts were taken from what used to be Nizam's territories into the state of Karnataka. Again, 1956, that is the districts of Kalaburagi or Gulbarga, what used to be called Gulbarga, that is Mallikarjun Khadge's place as well, Raichur, Yadgir, Vijayanagara, that's where Hampi is, Bellary, that's where the mining mafiosi are, Koppala and Bidar, that is 41 assembly seats and 5 Lok Sabha seats. So 7 in old Mysuru, 4 in Bengaluru, 3 in central Karnataka, 3 in coastal Karnataka, 6 in Bombay Karnataka or Kittur Karnataka, 5 in Kalyana Karnataka or Hyderabad Karnataka. Together it adds up to 28 seats. So I've given you a summary of the state of Karnataka and also the divisions on regional basis. Now it has some striking features in its politics. DK, tell us about some of them.
No, I'm looking at the impact actually. I was just looking at the figures region-wise and how things are different, how it will matter. So first of all, we are looking at JDS's existential crisis. If JDS has gone with the BJP to basically more for survival, BJP wanted the JDS Of course, because he wanted to play safe. But for JDS, it's a matter of survival. We'll come to that later. Here, what we are looking in the regions, say for instance, Mysuru Karnataka region. That tells you why the BJP has gone with the JDS. So in 2018 assembly election, BJP had got 11 seats in Mysuru Karnataka. It went down to 5 in 2023, more than half. JDS has a kind of sway over this region. JDS also came down drastically from 2018 to 2023, from 27 to 16. And who was the gainer? It was the Congress. Congress had 17 seats in 2018, which went up to 39 in Mysuru.
That's in the assembly election.
Yeah. So again, Vokaligas, Muslims rallying around the Congress. That's a big warning signal to the JDS and also to the BJP, which has been actually building new leadership in that Vokaliga belt. Another signal, what I'm reading here is, there has been a lot of talk in the media about, the last assembly election, B.L. Santosh was calling the shots, BJP National General Secretary Organization, at the cost of Yadurappa, who had been ousted from power.
And who had built the party in this state.
Yeah. So B.L. Santosh was calling the shots, Yadurappa was sulking, and now we suddenly see the role reversal. Now Yadurappa is calling the shots, B.L. Santosh has been relegated to the background, and these numbers tell us the reason. So in 2018, BJP got 30 seats in the assembly election, which went down to 16 in 2023 assembly election. An election where Yadurappa was seen as, having been rubbed the wrong way, the BJP seats have almost halved. And the Congress gained drastically. We are talking about Mumbai, Karnataka region, where you have Lingayat dominance. It's a Lingayat dominated region. There also, Congress's seats say almost doubled from 17 to 33. So what this tells us is, what this actually explains to us, the fall and rise of Yadurappa, I will say, or rise and fall and again rise of Yadurappa. It tells us about what the Congress is looking at, say in Mysuru Karnataka region, for instance, if Vokaligas, again in the next Lok Sabha election, you see the Vokaligas rallying around the Congress. D.K. Shivakumar has emerged as very a strong contender for the Chief Ministerial post, because there are already question marks.
He's a Vokaliga.
There are already question marks whether Sridhar Ramaiah will complete his tenure or there'll be up to 50-50 kind of tenure sharing. Now, if D.K. Shivakumar does very well, we'll see his supporters actually raising this demand that he has proved his point. He was always a wonderful organization person. And for the last assembly election result also, D.K. Shivakumar got the credit for organizing the election the way the center, the AICC or the rest of Congress never acts or never does. He got that credit. Now, if he comes out as a mass leader also, if Vokaligas rally around the Congress, we'll see a different kind of power struggle happening in Karnataka.
So, can I tell you a story since we mentioned D.K. Shivakumar? Mm. So, this is something that he reminded me of. I obviously had no recollection that almost 20 years ago, in fact, I think 21 years ago in 2003, in the early days of Walk the Talk, I had gone to what used to be Bangalore then to record a Walk the Talk with S.M. Krishna, who was then the chief minister. Was it 2003, 2004, thereabouts? And S.M. Krishna said, we'll go to Dodballapur, where an old lake was being rejuvenated. And he said, we'll record there. Now, D.K. Shivakumar tells me that while you were recording with him, I was the young man hanging out there behind him as one of the aides of this S.M. Krishna. And we know what happened after that. S.M. Krishna was chief minister. He was a Congress stalwart. He became the national external affairs minister, was a very senior member of the Congress party, and then joined the BJP. It so happens that D.K. Shivakumar and S.M. Krishna are now related through marriage in their families.
Yeah.
So that's how caste, politics, it all sort of melds in our system, whereby the same family can end up on different sides. In fact, even on the day I met D.K. Shivakumar this time, he was in a rush, because he had to go and call on S.M. Krishna, who's ailing and was in hospital. On which note, we shall take you to this short clip of our interview with D.K. Shivakumar in his home in Bengaluru. And with me is Sharan Puvana, our correspondent there.
When Prime Minister came here, he never asked for himself. He asked for the candidates. And they have changed more than 100 candidates in the country. And in Karnataka itself, 14 candidates they've changed. If the candidates were so strong, what was the need of changing the candidate?
Just as we showed you a little clip of our conversation with D.K. Shivkumar, here is one also with Tejasvi Surya, who's one of the BJP's youngest rising stars. He is contesting in Bengaluru South, which is a very important high-profile constituency. Very popular candidate. In fact, we met him in the High Court, where he had come to campaign among the lawyers. And see what he said about Jayashree Ram and how conciliatory he sounds. And also his claim. Obviously, he claims that he and his partners, that is BJP and its partner JDS, are going to sweep all the seats in Karnataka.
How strong an impulse is religion in this election?
Sir, I would say the cultural revival that has taken place over the last 10 years, I wouldn't want to use the word religion. I would say the cultural renaissance, the cultural revival, a sense of self-confidence that has, you witness all across the country is very palpable. So when people wish each other with Jai Shri Ram, it doesn't mean there is belligerence. It isn't anti anybody, but it is the reawakening of pride in a very old ancient civilization which has again found its roots. So I think in that sense, a long lost voice, a long lost self-confidence is found again. And that definitely is going to play a very important factor.
DK, there are also some very important and interesting patterns in Karnataka politics. One, it is probably our only genuinely polarized state on Congress and BJP basis. States are polarized, Hindu, Muslim, caste, etc. But Congress, BJP now, is it the only state that is purely, maybe Haryana is another example. Yeah. But this is, Haryana is a much smaller state. This is a straightforward polarization. And we have seen both parties keeping their voting percentages almost consistent over the years. In the case of Congress, for the state assembly, it's about 40%. I'm just averaging it going back to 2008, 2013, 2018, 2023, right? So just average it out, about 40%. And for the BJP in the assembly, about 35%. Isn't that true?
Yes. In fact, in Karnataka, if you look at caste-wise, they have been kind of evenly distributed. Evenly in the sense that, you know, the support of a particular caste group going with a particular party all through. Lingayats. We know how Lingayats from 90s onwards, they veered away from the Congress, went to the BJP. That's actually resurrected the BJP there. Not resurrected, in fact, that actually built the BJP in the state. Yeah. You have SC, SC left, SC right, both on to choosing one party or the other.
And you know, if you want to understand how diverse India is and how diverse the needs and demands of its voters, depending on where they are. So in Bengaluru city, in the heart of Bengaluru, one of the achievements that he's talking about to his prospective voters is that Modi government has made it possible for the Americans to open a consulate in Bengaluru. So people of Bengaluru don't have to go to Chennai or Delhi to get their visas or get their passports stamped or endorsed, or if they are American citizens, to get their passports renewed. Where else would you expect this or this kind of demand or this kind of voter-friendly claim, but in a city called Bengaluru with its startups, its techies and its NRIs. So scheduled castes in Karnataka are also put in two groups. This is something that I think we had said, I tried to explain in episode 1201, of which we'll share a link with you. You can see that. So those scheduled caste groups, which are seen to be more advanced or less backward or less downtrodden in a way, they are called SC right, right? Whoever decided it thought left was poorer, right was less poor. So that is SC right. Mallikarjun Kharge, for example, the Congress president, Sharan Pawana reminds me, is from an SC right community. And then the rest, who are seen to be even more backward and downtrodden, they are SC left. So that is the division that's peculiar to Karnataka. That said, carry on.
So what I was driving at is, like, every party, I mean, both the BJP and the Congress have their basically reliable support base. among different castes. So if you have Lingayats, Lingayats shifted from the Congress to the BJP in 90s. That on 90s onwards, we have seen the Lingayats is sticking with them. Vokaligas with the JDS all through. Kuruvas, now we saw, in the leaked report we are talking about, Kuruvas are said to be about 8% of the population, which is pretty big. That is Siddaramaiah's caste.
So if you see that leaked report, then Vokaligas and Lingayats are 8% each?
Around 10%
each. Around 10%, yeah. And Kurubas?
About 8%.
8%. So Kurubas are a distinctive OBC group.
Yeah, they are shepherd community actually. Shepherd, yeah. And they have stuck with the Siddaramaiah.
Sheep and they rear sheep and goats. Yeah. It's a large community. Yeah. And Siddaramaiah has always had it. Remember that Siddaramaiah is not an original congressman. He is an import
from JDS.
From JDS. Yeah. And that's the reason there is no love lost. I think that phrase was defined for this relationship. There is no love lost between him and H.D. Devegowda.
And the Congress's support base has been actually spread. It has had many, you know, Lingayat leaders. Although Lingayats, even though Lingayats shifted, a substantial chunk stayed with the Congress. It has some Vokalika leaders. We talked about S.M. Krishna. He was a tall Vokalika leader. That's how he BJP actually brought Krishna to its fold. Long back, after all, of course, he was forgotten. So it's like evenly spread. For the Congress, it has support base in among OBCs, some Vokaligas, some Lingayats, minorities, of course. That's how it has been a very potent force there, even.
It
has always remained a potent force.
Yeah. And the other important thing is that the BJP has ruled Karnataka more than once, but has never won a majority of its own. Because in 2008, it came to power, but it got 110 seats. So it was still three short, right? And again, in 2018, it finally got power through Operation Kamal. While it got more seats than the Congress Party, 104, it was still nine short of the majority mark. And that's why the Congress Party, which had 78 seats, joined hands with JDS, which had 37, and together they set up the government, which didn't last too long, but that's how they set up the government. So BJP has never won a majority of its own. To that extent, it's an unusual state for the BJP. And that said, in 2018, when BJP got the highest number of seats, 104, 10 short of the majority, and Congress Party got only 78. The fact is that even then the Congress Party got a higher percentage of votes than the BJP. That's how fascinating Karnataka is. Because 2018, for 104 seats, BJP got 36.22% of the vote and Congress got 38.14% of the votes. What this shows is that Congress's vote was concentrated in areas which gave it a limited number of seats, whereas the BJP had its votes in other seat-rich areas where it got more seats. But DK, the other thing is that this equation changes. For the assembly, the average, if you take from 2008, 2013, 2018, 2023, 35% for the BJP, about 40% for the Congress. But this shifts dramatically for Lok Sabha. And that precedes the arrival of Narendra Modi.
Yeah, exactly. You were just discussing the data. From 2008 Assembly to 2009 Lok Sabha, the BJP got a lift of about 8 percentage point. From 2013 to 14, it went up by about 13%. And then again from 18 to 19, it went up by about 15%. So BJP got over 51% votes in 2019.
So 2019, BJP got 51.2% vote. In 2009, BJP got 41.6% of the vote. This is 5 years before Narendra Modi. Remember, in 2008 assembly elections, the BJP had got only 33.86. So what we are trying to tell you is that in Lok Sabha elections, even without Modi, even 5 years before Modi, BJP got a bump of more than 8 percentage points. So if that was the case in 2009, you can imagine what it was in 2014. In 2014, BJP's vote percentage came to 43%. Compare this with what happened to BJP in 2013. The 2013 BJP did very poorly in Karnataka in the state assembly. They got just 19.89% of the vote. Also because Yediyurappa had broken away. Yediyurappa had got, for his party, 9.79%. If you add them both together, it's about 29.8% of the vote, right? That went up to 43% in 2014 elections. Now, Modi was also there. So, again, there was a 14% bump from Vidhan Sabha to Lok Sabha. Yet again, 36% in the assembly election of 2018, when BJP got the highest number of seats, 104 seats, short of majority still, but 104 seats. Whereas in these parliament elections that followed the following year in 2019, the BJP went up to 51.2%. So that is now a bump of more than 14%. So every Lok Sabha election, BJP gets a sizable bump over its assembly voting percentage. Yeah. And with each successive election, the bump has become larger. Yeah.
And that tells us something about the coming election. The fact that the BJP has gone with the JDS, given that BJP has got over 51% votes.
The last time.
Last election, BJP didn't have to go with the JDS. And yet they have aligned. JDS got over 9% last year. Right. So the BJP is looking at a chunk of over 60% votes here this time. That's safe they are playing this time.
Right. And that would then enable them to sweep it. Because even the first round of elections, it also, Mandya constituency is also there. Mandya is where film actor Sumalata, whose husband Amrish was also a very popular film actor and politician. Sumalata had contested as an independent the last time, supported by the BJP. She is a BJP person. She joined the BJP. Yet the BJP did not give her a ticket because Gowda wanted it for a member of his family, right? We can understand then, why did the BJP go with JDS? They have given them 3 seats, right? It's not that much.
Plus one that was given to Gowda's son-in-law.
Who has joined the BJP?
Yeah, he's Dr. Manjunath.
He's contesting on the BJP ticket. That is Bengaluru Rural, which was won, the only seat won by the Congress party the last time, by D.K. Suresh, who happens to be D.K. Shivkumar's brother. There, Dr. Manjunath, who's a very well-known cardiologist, who's been praised by Bill Gates and God knows who else, because he's done some wonderful work for cardiology, for cardiac care of poor people. Mm. So he's contesting there on a BJP ticket. Mm. So BJP has been willing to pay this price just to cover itself against any setbacks. But why has the Gowda family done it?
Because the decline was very, very rapid, from 20% to about 13%.
Their vote share.
Their vote share. And there was a big threat emerging in... For JDS, it's a very interesting thing. Now, in old Mysore region, it was the BJP which was turning the heat on the JDS. BJP was, promoting young Vokalika leaders like Pratap Simha, who was the Mysore MP. So, BJP was promoting these Vokalika leaders. It was turning the heat on the JDS. And then suddenly, in the last election, we see the Congress getting the better of the JDS. In that region, getting the better of the BJP also. And that's where the BJP decided to go for a tactical kind of alliance with the JDS. Because in old Mysore region, look, Gowda's vote bank has been the Vokaligas and Muslims. And we saw both sections going away from the JDS to the Congress. And that's where I think the panic set in.
And he was panicked because right now, see, Gowda, it's all about the family. Yeah. So let's list who all are there. So we know his son is there, Kumaraswamy. He's contesting from Mandya. His grandson is there. That is a grandson from the other son, from Revanna. That is Prajwal. He's contesting from Hassan. Right? Then his son-in-law is contesting on a BJP ticket from Bengaluru Rural. And he has two other members of his family who are one is an MLA, one is an MLC. So his family is looked after. In fact, I had said earlier in that episode 1201 that Gowda family actually has a dead heat with the extended Gandhi family. But if you go back to Vijayalakshmi Pandit and all that, it has 9 members of the family who either hold office or who are now contesting. So for him, it's the family. For BJP, it is a guarantee that their numbers don't go down in the region. So DK, in conclusion, what does this 2024 election in Karnataka mean for key players in national politics as well as the regional politics?
For the BJP, of course, those numbers are very important. At least retaining those 26, if not increasing it, or probably losing a couple, one or two.
They can't get 26 because 3 seats have been given to JDS.
Yeah, so it's just 25, in fact. So at least retaining it would be the BJP's task, because if BJP loses in In some other states, say Bihar or Maharashtra, as you were speaking about in the national interest, if the BJP loses here and there, it cannot afford to lose such, lose in Karnataka too. That will be a big, big blow. But the larger import, I say, is for Karnataka politics. Now, whatever be the numbers at the center, how the Karnataka contributes. But here, in the leadership, there is going to be a lot of churn. We have spoken about how Yadavappa has taken over this time. Yadavappa's son is the state BJP president. Modi and Shah have given them the complete freedom in terms of selection of candidates, the way they are running the campaign. If the BJP does badly, there will be a big question mark on the survival of Yadavappa.
And his family, because he has two and sons.
His other son is an MP, he is contesting again. Raghavendra, Vijayendra is the state BJP president. What happens to them? There is a big question mark on the political future of Yadavappa, if not the family, if not his sons right now. In the Congress again, there will be a lot of churn because, you know, so far the High Command has kept away, okay, fine, let's deal with the Lok Sabha election first. Then that leadership tussle will actually surface at some point of time. And what happens in these elections, where Vokaligas go, how Kurabas vote, how the Congress does in this election in different regions, will also have a bearing on how that tussle plays out. Interesting times ahead for us.
Yes, yes, indeed, DK. Interesting times. And when DK said, I wrote something in the national interest in case the BJP's numbers come down in some state, I didn't say, he didn't mean that. I said that numbers might come down in the national interest. He was only referring to a column of mine, which is called National Interest, because that was just making a calculation of the states that the BJP must be watching. It's very important to get these things right. Now, on a serious note, Bengaluru, Karnataka also represent one of BJP's big pain points. It's not something that the BJP talks about too much, but the fact is that India is a fast urbanizing nation. BJP rules it with a vast majority. It wins seats in so many states. But yet, in spite of that, it does not rule any of the big metros of India. You might say Mumbai, but Mumbai also, the BJP doesn't do it. Mumbai Municipal Corporation has not had an election for a long time. The state government, the chief minister is from the Shiv Sena. So of the big metros in India, that is Mumbai, Delhi, Kolkata, Hyderabad, Chennai, and Bengaluru, BJP doesn't own any. And that's why this state assembly loss for the BJP was a rude moment for them. And that is something that hurts the BJP. I don't know what will happen in Delhi going ahead, but this is an issue with the BJP, and I'm sure the BJP leaders think about this. Now, before we let you go, since we are talking about elections and us walking around, driving around these states, looking at campaigning, I also look at the walls and write that series, Writings on the Wall. So I go to places where it isn't exactly, the magnet is not always direct politics or direct campaigning. It's also a way of understanding what's happening in India, what's changing and what's not changing. This took me to a small town, a tiny town in Karnataka, in southern Karnataka, say about 60 kilometers from Bengaluru, depending on from where you draw the line, and say about 80 kilometers from Mysuru. This is the town of Channapatna. Channapatna is a beautiful, quaint town, very mixed town. Almost half and half Hindus and Muslims, maybe 55 Hindus, 45 Muslims or thereabouts. It's also a town that's famous for making this very unique wooden toys. They are so unique, in fact, that now this town has got the GI tag for these toys. You can see one of these workshops, you can see how these toys are made. You can also see some toys. Now the history is that Tipu Sultan, in 18th century, he saw these toys. They were made in Persia, and he had experts called in from Persia to teach local people how to make these toys. And that craft has remained since then. So if you're driving somewhere there, please, please, please look around and see these toys. And you know what? I bought so many toys, a truck, a dumper, two airplanes, right? And much else, including 10 firkis. All of that together added up to a royal amount of 1170 rupees. So I hope somebody markets these better, so these wonderful craftsmen get better value for their work. And by the way, the two interviews that we mentioned, of which we played some clips for you with Tejasvi Surya and also DK Shivkumar. The full interviews have been published on the print, and I will share links with you along with the description of this video.